with the capture of Bethel. You know, if you travel around in this country, you see a lot of towns with that name. Bethel, what does it mean? House of God. And so that's what we're going to be concerned with tonight. It says in verse 22, and we're talking about this capture of Bethel in 22 through 26. Verse 22, now the house of Joseph attacked Bethel, and the Lord was with them. Now, we've been talking about the exploits of the tribe of Judah and Simeon helping Judah. But next to Judah, the most important tribe was Ephraim. And so we're moving north compared to Judah. But it says the house of Joseph attacked Bethel. And so the most important tribe next to Judah was Ephraim. And verses 22 through 29 describe the activities of Ephraim and his brother Manasseh, their descendants. The descendants of Ephraim and his brother Manasseh. Now, the two tribes may have cooperated in the capture of Bethel, since the attack is attributed to the house of Joseph. And, of course, Ephraim and Manasseh were Joseph's sons. But if you were to look on a map, the city of Bethel lay within Ephraim's territory. Now, we are very familiar with the town of Bethel because of our study of Genesis. Now, for those of you who were with me through the book of Genesis, what can you remember about Bethel? Anything that comes to mind about Bethel? I am disappointed, I can tell you. Huh? Yeah, Jacob. And when, why did Jacob go to Bethel? Why was that his first stop of consequence? Yeah, he was going to Mesopotamian region, and he was on the run from his brother Esau, who had threatened to kill him. Now, this is where, in Bethel, this is where God had appeared to Jacob as he was running for his life. This is where Jacob saw something in a dream. What was it? Yeah, the stairway with angels ascending and descending. God standing at the top of the staircase. And number three, this is where God promised that he would bring Jacob back to this land, and he would give the land to his descendants. The fourth thing that I put down, this is where Jacob erected a pillar to commemorate this wonderful encounter with God. And number five, this is the place he had named Bethel, the house of God. It had a former name, which was Luz. The name was Luz, but Jacob's the one who changed it to Bethel, house of God. And something else that's very important, you will remember this. This is the place where Jacob bought a cave. What was the name of the cave? Cave of Machpelah. And so this is where he bought a cave and buried his dead. That's given in Genesis 35 and verse 8. And Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the three great patriarchs, were all buried there in the cave of Machpelah, as well as Sarah and Rebekah and Leah. they were all buried in the cave of Machpelah. So certainly that made Bethel very important. And so what I'm trying to tell you is that when you're talking about Israelite tradition, it was already a very important site, a sacred site. And so in this event that we're talking about here in Judges, it's the restaking of an ancient claim. You stake a claim. This is the restaking of an ancient claim. And the city, if you were to look on a map, the city of Bethel was located about 12 miles north of Jerusalem. 12 miles north of Jerusalem. It became a key religious center during the days of the divided kingdom. And I said the former name was Luz. Now notice what they did in 23 through 25. When they sent men to spy out Bethel, formerly called Luz, the spies saw a man coming out of the city. And they said to him, "Show us how to get into the city, and we will see that you are treated well." So he showed them, and they put the city to the sword, but they spared the man who showed them how to get in. They spared the man and his whole family. Now, to capture Bethel, Israel followed the strategy that was used earlier at Jericho. If you remember when Joshua came into the land and Jericho was there and spies were sent in, they found, of course, they were sent to whose house? Rahab. Yeah, sent to Rahab's house back the first time when spies were sent in under Joshua. And this time, notice, they found a man who was willing to show them a hidden entrance to the city. This may have been a secret tunnel. A lot of these cities had a secret tunnel that went to the water system. Had to have water. And so you would try to bring water into the city. And so it may have been a secret tunnel connected with the water system. For example, we know that Jerusalem was captured after David's men went through a tunnel leading from the Gihon Spring. It tells us that in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 8. And so this man told them a way to get into the city, a secret entrance. And in return for his cooperation, the spies promised safety. If you'll do this for us, then we'll do this for you. We promise you safety. And that's the same thing that happened with Rahab. She helped the spies back in Joshua's day, and therefore Rahab and her family were protected at Jericho. And now same thing happens here. The Hebrew construction to treat well uses the word hesed. Hesed's a very important word in the Hebrew. You would bring it over into English, H-E-S-E-D. It's a word that could be translated loyalty to a covenant. And loyalty to the terms of a covenant. And so they made a covenant with this man. If you'll show us the hidden entrance, then we'll make a covenant with you, a binding covenant, that we will protect you and your family when we finally take the city. And so there's that interesting word, hesed, covenant loyalty. And indeed, when the Israelites captured the city, they released the man and his family, and they were not harmed. It says in verse 26, he then went to the land of the Hittites, where he built a city and called it Luz, which is its name to this day. Whenever you see to this day, it doesn't mean to this day. It means to the day that this account was written. Now, unlike Rahab, notice what this unnamed man who had helped these men take the city of Bethel. Notice this unnamed man, after he and his family were protected and released, they did not choose to join the people of God. That's what Rahab had done with her family. They chose to join the people of God. But this man did not. He and his family went on to the land of the Hittites, and they built a city there, and interestingly enough, they named it Luz. Well, that was the former city, the former name of the city of Bethel, and so he just built a new city, and he named it Luz, after that ancient name of Bethel. And the Hittites are one of the Canaanite tribes that are mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 1. You can always remember, if you can just get Deuteronomy 7 verse 1 in your mind, and for some reason I did many years ago, if you ever need to read the list of the seven nations of the Canaanites, you can always turn to Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 1, and that's where they will be listed. And so you never know on the street when somebody's going to ask you about, I need to know the seven tribes of the Canaanites. And you better whip it out. Deuteronomy chapter 7 verse 1 is where you need to go. Now, the land of the Hittites, if you were to look on a map back in this time, it basically would, on the map, it would be the area that you see, which is called Syria, the land of the Hittites. The Hittite Empire was based in Asia Minor, but extended its control over wide areas west of the Euphrates River. And this city that he established, this new Luz in Hittite territory, we have no idea about its location. It has not been located by archaeologists, but so we don't know where it was located. Now, that brings us, you know, for the most part, I mean, there have been some setbacks. We saw a setback in verse 21 where the Benjamites could not dislodge the Jebusites in Jerusalem. And there we know also that in the success of Judah and Simeon, in verse 19, there was a setback. They were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had iron chariots. So there have been a couple of setbacks, but things have been going relatively well in trying to occupy this territory, but now we come to 27 through 36 and we've got failures of the tribes to do what they were supposed to do. 27 through 36, look at 27 and 28. Manasseh did not drive out the people of Bethshan, or Taanak, or Dor, or Ibleam, or Megiddo, and their surrounding settlements, for the Canaanites were determined to live in that land. And when Israel became strong, they pressed the Canaanites into forced labor, but they never drove them out completely. Now, starting right here, we are going to read about a list of cities. Now, you might think, is this that important to our understanding of the book of Judges? You bet it is. This is very important. And based on what we're going to read in this first chapter, that's why I'm taking so long with it, is going to be, you'll understand the background for why there's so much trouble that we're going to read about in the book of Judges. But beginning right here, we've got a list of cities where the Canaanites were not killed, not driven out. Either way, they weren't killed, weren't put to death, and they were not driven out. Now, as we read this, it does cause us to asked some questions about the book of Joshua. It says when you read Joshua, they were having great success and they were conquering these cities, and you get the idea, well, these cities were already conquered. But you see, we learned that in Joshua, it is true that many of these cities were taken, but then they moved on, Joshua and his men, and the Canaanites moved back in. And so they had to be taken again. And so, for example, in the book of Joshua, we read that all the royal cities were captured along with their kings, and it says they were utterly destroyed. When we see the list of cities that were not taken, we begin to wonder, well, was the account in the book of Joshua exaggerated? But I would tell you that in one sense, they were quite accurate. What we're supposed to see in the book of Joshua is Joshua went into the promised land and he gained the upper hand throughout the land as a whole after a long warfare. But then they were quite successful in capturing these cities and destroying these cities. But again, the Jebusites move back into Jerusalem, and other Canaanites move back into these cities after Joshua had these military successes. And so what we're going to find in the book of Judges, we're going to see the failure of these tribes, these northern tribes, in occupying land that should have been held a long time ago before Joshua's death. They were taken during Joshua's day, but they were not held permanently, you see. And so now it's got to be, they got to deal with these cities again. And so the remainder of chapter 1 is going to record the inability of these other tribes to occupy their territory. Now, Manasseh's allotment included several key cities in the Valley of Jezreel. Now, Valley of Jezreel, very important, extended from the Sea of Galilee to the Mediterranean Sea. That's the Valley of Jezreel. From the Sea of Galilee to the Mediterranean Sea. Now, the cities that are mentioned here in this verse control one of the most important trade routes of Canaan. Joshua 17, verse 16, you remember Joshua 17, verse 16 mentions the chariot problems in these areas where these iron chariots moved freely. Now, I put in my notes, if you would want to know the equivalent, the Israelites did not have chariots, and the Canaanites did in the flatlands. And that would be, an iron chariot would be the equivalent of a tank. And so the Israelites, they didn't have military equipment that could even begin to compare with the iron chariots. But I stress to you that the Israelites still could have been victorious if they'd had enough faith and if they had obeyed God. They could have done it. But here's the problem. I've got a note here, and you might make a shorter one. The determination of the Canaanites to remain in these key cities was stronger than the faith of the tribe of Manasseh to destroy them as God had commanded. Now, you have that? The determination of the Canaanites to remain in these cities was stronger than the faith of the tribe of Manasseh to destroy them as God had commanded. And that's true of the other tribes up here as well. And so, reflecting their lack of faith, the most the Israelites could do was, They didn't drive them out. They didn't kill them. They just made them slaves many times. Made them into, in other words, they put them into forced labor. And so there's the fault with Manasseh. And so verse 29, nor did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites living in Gezer, but the Canaanites continued to live there among them. Now it says the tribe of Ephraim failed to gain possession of Gezer. That was 18 miles west of Jerusalem. Gezer is another old city. Well, I've seen some men that call them old geezers. But Gezer was an old city. I looked into this. It reaches back to 3,500 B.C. 3,500 B.C. And again, it was located in the tribal portion of Ephraim. It was close to the coastal highway. That was the road connecting Jerusalem and the port of Joppa. Ever heard of the port of Joppa? Who boarded a ship at Joppa? Jonah. What was he trying to do? You can't do that. You can't run away from God. Where are you going to go to run away from God? But he tried it. Had disastrous results. Swallowed by a great fish. And finally got vomited up on the land. God said, now you're going to go to Nineveh? And Jonah said, you bet. I'm heading that way. After he went through that experience. But this what I'm trying to say is Gezer had a very important location. It had political importance. It had commercial importance because of its strategic location. And obviously a town of some consequence. It was not held by Israel until the time of Solomon. And even then it says, Pharaoh of Egypt attacked and captured Gezer. He set it on fire. He killed the Canaanites who were living there. And then he gave the city of Gezer as a wedding gift to his daughter who married Solomon. So it was not really taken completely until Solomon's day. And even then it was taken by the Egyptians, by the Pharaoh, who wanted to give his daughter a nice wedding gift. And so he gave her a whole city. After he wiped out the Canaanites, and Pharaoh's daughter was one of his many wives. How many did he have? You need to remember it. How many wives did Solomon have? 700 wives. Yep, and 300 combines. Like the little boy said when he came home, boy, Mama, we studied about a big farmer today. He had 300 combines. But it's concubines. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. But a concubine is a wife, called a secondary wife, but still had 1,000 women. Well, one of them was the daughter of Pharaoh, and Gezer was given to Solomon's wife as a wedding gift, and it said in the text that Solomon rebuilt Gezer. You would find that in 1 Kings chapter 9. So there's another problem right there where the Ephraimites did not drive out the Canaanites living in Gezer. Verse 30, another problem. Neither did Zebulun drive out the Canaanites living in Kitron or Nahalal, who remained there among them, but they did subject them to forced labor. Now, Zebulun's territory, we're moving further north, was north of Manasseh's territory, and the cities of Kitron and Nahalal have not been positively identified, but again, they were probably on the northern edge of the Jezreel Valley, and Zebulun messed up, did not kill or drive out the Canaanites in these cities, as God had commanded, and they thought, we got a better idea, we'll make slaves out of them. Then you move again to the tribe of Asher. Nor did Asher drive out those living in Akko or Sidon or Ahalab or Achzib or Helba or Aphek or Rehob. And because of this, the people of Asher lived among the Canaanite inhabitants of the land. Now, it's interesting, you know, before Jacob died, he gave a, he called in his sons to bless them. You remember that? And he gave a prophecy concerning each one. Well, concerning Asher in Genesis 49, verse 20, Asher was promised that his food would be rich and he would provide delicacies that would be fit for a king. Now, that means that Asher was promised ground that would be very fertile ground. And indeed, the tribe did receive ground that was very fertile. It was near the Mediterranean coast, and right there on the Mediterranean, and it reached northward to Tyre and Sidon. You'd find that in the book of Joshua, chapter 19. But notice the tribe of Asher. They experienced some setbacks against regions on the Mediterranean north of Mount Carmel and against several other towns a little further inland. And here's the problem that we see it again. God, when God keeps repeating something, you're supposed to get it. That's going to lead to big trouble. It said they did not drive out the Canaanites in seven cities, but chose to live among them. Now, why can that be a problem when Israelites choose? God said, destroy them or drive them out. You don't destroy them, you don't drive them out, you choose to live among them. What problem can that cause? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. If you don't drive them, if you choose to live among them, then you adopt their customs, their practices, their religion. And Canaanite religion was corrupt. Oh, disgusting. I mean, sexual prostitution, very prominent in Canaanite religion. And so they chose to live among them. And the northern part of Asher's territory, they didn't drive out the Canaanites. And do you know that the northern part of Asher's territory came to be known as Phoenicia? Phoenicians were merchants on the sea. They weren't really known for that. And the cities of Tyre and Sidon, now we talk about them in the Bible most of the time as being Phoenician cities, but that territory, If Asher had held on to it, would have been theirs. But anyway, the cities of Tyre and Sidon had a strong Canaanite culture and real strong Baal worship. We're going to talk more about Baal in a minute. But their culture and their religion had a strong influence on Israel. Do you remember a king by the name of Ahab? What was the worst decision he ever made in his life? Married Jezebel. How many girls you see today named Jezebel? You don't see any children, any girls being named Jezebel. You don't see that. Do you know what Jezebel was? A Phoenician. Yep, Phoenician princess. She tried to make Baal worship the state religion of Israel when she married Ahab. She was a cruel woman, a wicked woman. And when Ahab of Israel married her and brought her to Israel, she just said, well, I'll just bring in Baal worship and make Baal worship the state religion of Israel. So there you go with this influence, because they did not drive out the Canaanites but chose to live among them. You can see the far-reaching consequences. Then another tribe, Naphtali, verse 33. Neither did Naphtali drive out those living in Beth Shemesh or Beth Anath, but the Naphtalites too lived among the Canaanite inhabitants of the land, and those living in Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became forced laborers for them. Now, Naphtali received promises of great blessing in Genesis chapter 49. We know that Barak, served under Deborah, Barak belonged to the tribe of Naphtali, and his tribe, the tribe of Naphtali, led the way into battle. We're going to see that soon in Judges chapter 4. We know that the tribe of Naphtali also fought for Gideon. That's going to be an interesting story that we're going to cover in chapter 6 and 7. But here, notice, even though they did some good things, the tribe of Naphtali, the emphasis here is for what they did not do. I mean, you can do some good things, but if there are some important things that you do not do, then that can lead to big trouble, and it did. They failed to dislodge the residents of two cities, Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath. Now, here's the problem with these two cities in particular. They were centers of Canaanite religion. We know that. Centers of Canaanite religion. Canaanite worship centers. Listen to this. Beth Shemesh means house of the sun. S-U-N. And guess what? Which god was worshipped there? Now come on. The sun god. That was not a hard question. Are you with me? You're not falling off the vine, are you? That's as bad as when I played a joke on my grandmother many years ago and called her and told her she was going to win $1,200 in the contest. Her name had been drawn if she could just answer one question. And she said, okay. And I said, Mrs. White, for $1,200, who is buried in Grant's tomb? She thought for a minute. Here was her classic answer. Oh, me. It's been so long since I studied history, I done forgot. My grandfather came that day to pick her up. She was caring for another woman. And she said, Joe, who's buried in Grant's tomb? He said, oh, Annie, Grant is. She said, I lost $1,200 because I didn't know the answer to that. Then my granddaddy almost had a stroke. But house of the sun, which god was worshipped there? The sun god. Okay, then the other one, Beth Anath. It means house of Anath. Guess who Anath was? She was the Canaanite warrior goddess. She was bad to the bone. Let me tell you about her. She had a violent temper. My life experience, you need to stay clear of women who have a violent temper. That's my life experience. I married one who's got a calm demeanor. But a woman who's got a violent temper, you better stay clear. But this Anath was a Canaanite warrior goddess. She had a violent temper, and she took great joy in slaughtering others in battle. She is depicted as being fierce and wild. Some pictures show her wading knee-deep in blood and cutting off heads and hands of men, and then binding the heads to her torso and the hands to her sash. That's a bad woman that wades around in blood, knee-deep, cutting off heads, cutting off hands, and then attaching them to her belt as trophies of war. And so that's the house of Anath. And so rather than kill these Canaanites, and like God had said, or drive them out, nope, they decided to live among them. The worst that they would do is just make them slaves. And then we'll take 34 through 36, and that'll be the end of this chapter. We got to talk about the tribe of Dan. 34 through 36, the Amorites, again, one of the Canaanite tribes, listed in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1. The Amorites confined the Danites to the hill country, not allowing them to come down into the plain. And the Amorites were determined also to hold on to Mount Heriz and Ajalon and Shalalbim. But when the power of the house of Joseph increased, they too were pressed into forced labor. And the boundary of the Amorites was from Scorpion Pass to Selah and beyond. Okay, now this is very simply telling us that the Danites, like the others, they made a tremendous mistake. But now it's worse. You see why it's worse? The Danites weren't even able to occupy their territory. The others moved in and allowed the Canaanites to live among them, but here they failed to occupy their territory. And the problem was that the Amorites did not want to give up the flat land, the plains and the valleys. That's where most of their inheritance of the Danites was, in the plains, in the flat lands. That's mostly what Dan got. But the Canaanites, they were stiff resistance, and they wouldn't give it up. And notice what the Canaanites did. They drove the Danites up into the mountains. The Danites were not even able to take the flat land that they had been given. It became such a frustrating problem that the Danites left, a whole bunch of them, they left the territory they had been given by Joshua, and they moved all the way up to the extreme north, later to a town called Laish, and they dwelt there. And much of the land of Dan that he was given remained in the hands of the Amorites. And so we got some real problems going on. What's the least that you should see? That there are these Canaanites are being allowed to live among the Israelites when God had said, you destroy them or you drive them out. And so I need to give a summary of this because it's the end of the chapter. Now, this survey that we have gone over after the death of Joshua, it began on a positive note. You remember that. We talked about the fact that the tribes consulted Yahweh, wanting to know from Yahweh which tribe should go first into battle. And the tribe of Judah was chosen. And we know that Judah and Simeon had some initial victories. But then the rest of the chapter is filled with these with incomplete obedience. It's filled with compromising tolerance, we might call it. And even when the Israelites gained the upper hand over the Canaanites, they refused to carry out the command of the Lord. Instead of killing them, instead of driving them out, the men of Israel chose to live among them, and before long, you got it, they adopted Canaanite practices. Instead of making this the land of the people of God, they, you see, became like the Canaanites in many of their practices and even in that horrible religion. Now, so what is the lesson about that? What began as toleration became apostasy. What is the definition of apostasy?
Falling away.
They decided we're just going to tolerate these Canaanites among us. It led to a falling away from God. What looked to be reasonable proved to be lethal. Living with the Canaanites led to worshiping with the Canaanites. And so, if you tolerate Baal's people, sooner or later you bow at Baal's altar. Got it? You tolerate Baal's people, and next thing you know, you're bowing at Baal's altar. And this is why the period of the judges and the rest of the book that we're going to study, see, this foundation is essential that you know that. Because the period of the judges turns out to be so dark, and the purpose of this first chapter is to show the deadly consequences of compromise and disobedience to God. When you begin compromising with the world, and you disobey the commandments of God, that is going to have some horrible, horrible consequences. And so, at the same time, this chapter announces that if anything is ever going to be accomplished by God's people, it's because of God's gracious presence and His action on behalf of His people. But if these people choose not to listen to God, not to obey God, not to call on God, the consequences will be dire indeed. And so from this point onward, we're going to be talking about the consequences of this first chapter where the tribes did not do what God said. They did not drive out the Canaanites. They did not kill the Canaanites. They chose to let them live among them. And that was a bad, bad mistake. Well, it's good that we finished this.